This program is brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM. If you like what you hear and want to support our work, please make a donation at fundraiser.resonance.fm.
Good afternoon, you're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com on the net. And it's our annual fundraiser here at Resonance. This year we're trying to raise £100,000 so we can move our studios and improve our facilities. If you like what you hear on Resonance, please support us. Go to fundraiser.resonance.fm. Where you will find full details of our many live events, concerts across central London, including, not including Club Integrals, because that's been and gone. So there are various, there are still a few things left on the auction, but the events that are still left are The Relatives at the Royal Oak on Saturday, February the 17th. At 8 p.m., between 8 p.m. and 11 p.m. That's The Relatives and special guests from The Relatively Good Radio Show play their inimitable brand of acoustic urban song at one of London's finest pubs, the Royal Oak, 44 Tabard Street, London SE14JU. So that's The Relatives at the Royal Oak tomorrow, Saturday, February the 17th, 8 o'clock. Sunday, February the 18th at 7 o'clock, a night of four or five American comics at the Ivy House. That's a Nunhead American radio presentation at the Ivy House, 40 Stewart Road, London SE15 3BE. Starring Scott Capuro, Rick Kiesvetter, Erich McElroy and Robin Perkins, hosted by Lewis Schaffer and Lisa Moyle, with music by The Relatives, who we heard of just a few minutes ago. OK, so that's the night of four or five American comics at the Ivy House, Sunday, February the 18th at 2018, all as part of the Resonance fundraiser. And Wavelength has a guest. Good afternoon, Clive.
Once more, yes.
Yes, Clive Graham of Paradigm Discs, who is in the studio to promote, discuss and describe his latest release on Paradigm Records, which is what number, what?
This is number 33.
Number 33, mm-hmm, of your illustrious list of, what was number one?
Number one was the first of three compilations of London, unknown London artists.
Uh-huh.
And most of them remained unknown, it has to be said. That was in
1990. Well, it wasn't helped by your releasing them on.
Well, I mean, one or two went on to do more things and better things.
Yeah.
John Wall being a prime example.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the other artists have not released another thing since.
Right.
Well, I mean,
is this by design? I mean,
no,
do you
deliberately choose people whose
careers go sideways?
Well, I was hoping that it would be a launching pad for their greater successes, but
yeah. Is it true? I mean, are you in your career as a record producer, have you hoped for that breakthrough where you become a household name?
Me?
Yeah.
No. I might have started off thinking, you know, you don't start running a record label without thinking that, you know, you can garner some interest from somewhere. So it,
right.
I thought, because what was it, 1995 I started, so quite late on, really, for me in my life, that is.
Uh-huh.
Like, I just thought, I'm sure I can do better than all this other stuff that I was hearing at the time, and so that was the initial impetus, was, you know,
yeah,
the paucity of music that I was hearing. At least that's how I felt about it. And it was sort of early on in the CD revolution. Everyone was raving about digital music at that time, in the same way as they rave about analog now. So it was like the whole new format and this kind of, you know, it was, and I just thought, a compilation, great, I'll fill up 70 minutes and we'll get, you know, eight or so artists from London who are making really great music, but actually no one's paying any attention. And so it was deliberately, I deliberately chose people who were unknown.
Right.
And I'm not on there at all. I didn't contribute to it. I just thought that my work is cut out just putting these things together.
Right. And your own work being as part of Morphogenesis?
No. I mean, the second CD was a Morphogenesis CD, but the compilation, it's all solo artists. There's one group, I think, on one of the compilations. There were three compilations in all, Variations 1, 2, and 3, each doing, worse than the previous one, really, to be honest. But I did, I mean, you know, I'm still very proud of bits of all of them, especially Volumes 1 and 3.
Right.
But I managed to get Bob Cobbing on a couple of CDs, and I'm still to this day, like, one of the very few people to have released his work in recent decades.
Right.
Although, of course, there's been that compilation on the British Library, the CD that the British Library put out of his archive. But yeah, so Bob Cobbing's on there, and I'm very proud to have done that.
Right.
And you know, a few other bits and pieces that are on there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And you've done William Burroughs.
Yeah. The spoken word thing is increasing, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a couple of years back now, the Burroughs. Yeah.
And you also hosted a show called the Sound Poets Exposed for several years on Resonance.
Yeah.
Hours of quite difficult spoken word productions, I would say.
Yes.
Sound poets and concrete poets.
Yeah.
In fact, I was a guest, I think, once or twice on your show.
Yeah.
With that Dutch LP. That was quite an oddity, wasn't it?
AH8. Still love to get hold of a copy of that.
Right. But that was a rarity.
Very much so. Several hundred quid's worth.
Right. Mm. And this leads on to your latest release then. And does...
Well, it's our release, isn't it? This is the thing. This is what's weird about this.
I thought I recognised it.
This is what's so weird about this particular, because normally I come along to your show and I, you know, you won't know much about what I've done, and therefore it's easy to have lots of questions. But this is, I mean, it's very hard to find for you to ask me questions on this, because A, it's all your tapes, and B, you know, any regular listeners to this show will have already heard a great deal of it.
Right.
You know, the regular listeners will be familiar with Seddon.
Yes, with Seddon. We've said it.
Oh, we've said it.
We haven't given it away to mentioning it. Yes, listeners. This is the Seddon.
They're all switching off right now.
No.
Not more Seddon.
Captain Morris Seddon.
Yeah.
On vinyl, finally.
Yeah.
Released by Paradigm Discs, but it doesn't come out until the 23rd. Although it's out there on the internet, isn't it?
I think my British distributors are letting it go on the 23rd. I mean, you know, these huge kind of monolithic distributors, they have schedules that they have to keep to. They don't release things as they get them. They do them in batches.
Okay.
So they're waiting, I don't know why, until the 23rd. Well, that's okay. Meanwhile, I can sell it elsewhere, much to their annoyance, but hey.
Right.
Yes.
So the distributors is this people like Forced Exposure and...
Well, Forced Exposure have it. They're in America.
I noticed it on their last mail out.
Yeah, they're selling it. Yeah.
Right. But not until the 23rd?
No. I think they've released it. They've gone ahead and it's out there now.
Oh, okay. Okay. And so who else? I mean, who else is your... I can't remember what the name of... Norman Records.
Well, Norman will get their support. Apply from Cargo, which is my UK distributor.
Okay.
Well, UK and other countries, to be honest, because they also sell globally, and I've given them the okay to do that.
Right.
Forced Exposure has an exclusive for the US, and they also sell globally. So I don't know. I don't think I've crossed over to. I don't know. Maybe there is some sort of pitched battle. I don't know.
Yeah. So there is. It's an edition of 500 vinyl LPs of selected and edited Seddon tapes. Some of which will have been heard on Resonance over the years. But I think there's two or three new ones there that people won't have heard
that's
before.
That's true.
And it comes with an illustrated booklet. I mean, there's good reasons, aren't there, to buy the vinyl rather than download it from Bandcamp.
Yeah, you don't get the... There's that lovely story that you wrote, which, you know, it must be a good 15-minute read, at least, isn't it, to read through it. And that's all printed in the booklet.
Yeah. So it's an 8-page glossy full colour booklet illustrated with photographs by myself.
Yes, you're writ large all over this, aren't you? I mean, all the photography is yours, practically all of it.
Yeah.
So
and
it's come out quite well. I mean, it's almost exactly as I would have wished, and nothing is ever perfect, but it's good. I'm happy with it.
I mean, and how much does it cost?
Or what do you mean, to buy the record?
Yes.
Or to make it?
To buy it. If anyone wants to buy it.
Well, you know.
It varies, doesn't it? A little bit. Give or take 99p, it sort of depends where you're getting it from.
There are some places online, which I won't mention, that seem to have it ridiculously cheap. I don't know how they... Yeah.
Oh, we shouldn't.
Well, not ridiculously, but cheaper than me. And if it's cheaper than me, then...
How can that be?
Well, because it's distribution and they get discount and it's boring. It's not that interesting. I'll tell you later.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But basically, I'm not really that sure.
Oh.
I can't believe how something that's obviously quite an... the booklet itself is a third of the cost of the whole production. Just the booklet. So it's an expensive production.
Right.
Anyway, your question, yeah. I mean, I'm 17 quid is what I'm trying to sell.
This is more or less the retail price. I mean, it might be 15 or it might be $17.99, something like that.
Yeah.
Okay, so perhaps some people don't know anything about this. They might be tuning in for the first time. They've never heard of Captain Morris Seddon.
Yeah, let's make that assumption.
And they don't know who we are or anything.
No.
So what should we tell them about this record? What's it all about?
Well,
should we just play a snatch?
That's as good a way of describing it as any.
Right.
Although this is... Yeah, okay. This is an odd track.
Right.
It's playing, but not...
Track 7. We've got to be careful, haven't we? We mustn't play track 8. Mustn't play track 8 for reasons which will remain obscure or mysterious.
And we have reached the end. Please turn over. Please turn over to the other track, to track 2 of this same cassette for continuation of this test. Please turn over to track 2 of this same cassette, cassette number 2. Please turn over. Turn over to track 2 of this same cassette. Please turn over. Turn over to the second track of this same cassette. I seem to have judged this rather wrongly. I should have made my recording of this announcement slightly later on the tape.
Yes.
He does end rather abruptly, though. I presume on the vinyl, it will carry on just slightly.
That's how the recording ends.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So that was the voice of Captain Morris Seddon, who died a few years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
And these cassettes were all telephone conversations where he would record.
Well, that one wasn't, of course, but yeah.
You've ruined my announcement.
Oh, sorry.
That one wasn't.
As if you don't know.
Carry on. I must admit, it had slipped my mind that that wasn't. Of course, it wouldn't be, would it? It couldn't be. That would be an insane telephone conversation.
You finish what you're saying, then I'll...
No. I've got to make... First of all, I'm going to make sure I don't play track 8.
Yeah.
So I've got to just adjust this one. I'm going to go back.
Play the start of track 8.
Yeah, no.
No.
We won't take the chance.
No.
It's an abusive call, isn't it?
Well, it just contains some profanity. 2 words.
Yeah.
Mm.
But it's that, I have to say, that is the one track that you were very keen on including.
Yes.
And I was less keen on it.
Yes.
Because it's Captain Morris Seddon being abused on the phone, and he sort of maintains his usual polite sort of decorum against this torrent of drunken abuse, from somebody who should remain nameless.
Yeah.
And the people do remain nameless, don't they?
Everyone is nameless in the sense that, you know, anybody who did give their full name, they've had it bleeped out. Well, not bleeped, right. But usually just you can sneakily edit around it.
Yeah.
And phone numbers and all such other things are apart from his phone number.
Right. So what was that enigmatic sort of announcement where he's saying, please turn over?
At the end of... as everyone listening probably knows, he ran his own company called Audiorama, which repaired ancient and museum quality valve only kind of radiograms and so forth. Right. And he was
and of course the heated clothing.
Oh yes, but this pertains to the Audiorama. It's an Audiorama customer who's he's just basically recorded a run through of the shortwave band on a radiogram or something.
Right.
And, he's going to continue the test on the other side. And he's sort of rather formally kind of announcing that at the end of the cassette.
Yes.
So I thought that would make quite a nice...
Why do you think he repeats it so often?
Because he thinks he's leaving the message at the end of the tape.
And it doesn't end.
But the tape doesn't end. So he just keeps...
So probably, knowing him, probably for economical reasons, he decides to fill up the tape rather than just leave it empty.
Yeah, yeah.
Would have been typical, wouldn't it?
Yeah, who knows? Anyway, so that was 1993.
Right.
Just to give you, that's about as much as I know.
Yeah. Okay, well, perhaps we should we play track two to give people more of a flavour of one of the telephone conversations as opposed to the ending of a cassette?
Yeah.
The point being that he recorded all of his, a lot of his telephone conversations over a period of years. Then he was taken into a care home, and the council sort of took out, because he had no living relatives, the local council took over his affairs and sold off all of the belongings of Datchet Cottage in order to pay for his care home fees. But of course, there was no value as such in all of these recorded cassettes. So these were sort of scattered around the floor of Datchet Cottage in what you would probably describe as fairly squalid surroundings, having not been cleaned for 50 years because he was a confirmed bachelor and sort of a bit like Quentin Crisp. He didn't actually believe in cleaning.
Yes.
Having come from a sort of very privileged childhood, having lived in Elgar's old house in Hampstead, where his father was the son of a salt baron, but deserted the family, leaving the mother and sister and Morris sort of basically in the lurch. But Morris gained a scholarship to Gordonston School because the mother had connections. And so Morris went to Gordonston and perfected this manner of speaking and behaviour. So
did you think he spoke slightly differently as a child?
Hard to know. Yeah. I mean, it's impossible to know. But the father was actually a salt baron from I always forget the name. What's a suburb of Manchester? I can't remember now.
Well, there's many, aren't there?
Yeah, it's up that way anyway. So whether the father was had a kind of Lancashire accent, I do not know.
Yeah.
The mother was German. And she was a concert pianist.
Yeah.
But yes, whether he would have spoken that way if he hadn't gone to Gordonston, who knows?
I'm sure it enhanced it. But he doesn't. Yeah. He's not ultra plummy. He's. But there's a lot of precision in his voice, and it's quite martial, I find.
Right. Yes.
Although.
And he called himself. He insisted on being called Captain Morris Seddon. But interestingly, you, with your Hercule Poirot role, managed to find a nugget of information which I had never come across. But then I never really committed myself to it. But you could disclose it now for the first time.
Well, I contacted Royal Signals, the actual kind of. There's an organisation, and there's a form you can fill in for finding out about, you know, ex-members and deceased and so forth. And I contacted them saying, have you got any information about this guy? I know he was there at this particular point and he was there for a certain amount of time. And, you know, what have you got? Mm. You know, what have you got on him? What was the reason for him being, what's the word they use? Oh, what is the word? Yes. Decommissioned. Why was he decommissioned? Or what, did he retire? Did he voluntarily leave? What happened?
Right.
And that's still something that we haven't found out. I thought I'd leave that with you to do.
I'm perhaps not as interested as you are. I do suspect that
I want to know.
I think there is an element of trying to almost uncover something on your part. No, it's almost like you want
to
not convinced that he actually was a captain.
No,
I
he
do
was.
Remember you were very sceptical about the idea that he could ever have been a captain at all. But we do have photographs of him as an officer. And then I think you found out that wasn't he like an honorary captain or something?
Yes, it wasn't a permanent military rank that he was given. It was either temporary or even a stand-in. I'm not sure, but he led a gang of whatever they're called, the new recruits or whatever.
Well, I mean, he was very well versed in electronics and wireless technology.
Yeah.
And I think they probably wanted to make use of that. And perhaps in order for him to be an instructor, they probably had to make him an officer for the period of time that he was in there. But he would always have been a square peg in a round hole, wouldn't he? I think we can agree on that.
I think so. I think, you know, I mean, he was dishevelled. I mean, if the house is a real mess. There's certainly no sense.
Yeah, but he wasn't dishevelled at that time. Not when he was an officer. I mean, the pictures of him as an officer in the army, he's immaculate.
Yes, such as there are. I mean, I'm sure he could scrub up well and did for the photography, and he did it with the moustache and all that in his early youth. But I would still imagine that he was a hoarder. I can't imagine that came on later on in life. I think hoarding is something.
That's different to being dishevelled, but I don't. Yeah, well, I wouldn't agree. You couldn't be in the army and be dishevelled for a start.
Well, you might be able to in royal signals. Well, that's it. And this is all why I want to know what did happen. Did he really, match up to what they needed from a captain? I don't know. I mean, and anyway, but for whatever reason, he hung on to the title, the rank.
Yeah,
absolutely, kind of religiously,
doggedly throughout the rest of his life. Even though, as we agree, he might have been in the army for 5 years or something.
No, it was longer than that. It was more like it was 12.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. So he was in the army for 12 years, but then after that, he still insisted on being called captain.
Yeah.
Retired. It was Captain Morris Seddon. Royal Seddon was retired.
It's the retired.
So that's another quibble, isn't it? We have to just we don't know. That's a euphemistic term.
I think he was quite capable. I don't know. It's not all been fleshed out. Don't know the answers to these questions.
No, I'm not. I'm slightly curious, but I'm not trying to. I don't particularly want to. What's the word? Expose him in some way as having been fraudulent.
He's a much loved character by all who knew him and met him and had any kind of contact with him. And I wish I'd met him. And you only see nice things written about him.
Yes.
And you just get that.
Well,
feeling.
Apart from the neighbour.
Apart from
sorry to I'm playing devil's advocate. The ball is now back in my court. In that sense, there was an ongoing dispute with his dogs, which went on for years between him and his immediate neighbour, which almost did for both of them. I think they both suffered. Their health suffered as a result of endless court battles and so on. There's that person who was not enamoured of Captain Seddon, and of course there is the person on track 8.
The track 8 character has mental health problems, doesn't he?
I'm not going to commit myself to that.
Okay.
Oh dear,
let's play a track.
That could be libelous. Let's start with a track. This is track 2, which is what's the title of this one?
Ich möchte lieber die Finger davon lassen.
You're perfect German. You do actually speak German, don't you? You have a German connection yourself, don't you?
I have, but not Hildesheim.
No. Well, I did detect that there wasn't a Hildesheim accent there.
No, but there isn't, is there? No, yes, I mean, what do you want, a translation?
Well, let's play the track.
Well, our light system went out of work. And
But the lighting in the building...
The lighting in the building, the automatic lighting.
Right.
Who came here the last day and said, I tell you, the light doesn't work?
That's right.
Yes. Now, we, our darling neighbor, Dr. Team, Time, no, Teamic, what is his name? Thiele.
Thiele.
Looked at all the things and he said, it seems to me that the controller bit is not properly this, that, and the other. It is kaput. He talked to Dylan, and he said, and Dylan said that I had great difficulties to get this part for the old system, and I'm quite sure that the controller is kaput, that everything is all right. And then Dr. Thiele made the interesting remark, well, here's his job for your friend, Captain Chen.
Well, yes, that's all very well, but in view of all the litigation going on in that building non-stop, I really, ich möchte lieber die Finger davon lassen.
Ja, natürlich, jeder möchte die Finger davon lassen. Dylan doesn't want to know any more about the building. You don't know. Brocklehurst is hesitating. After these Gesinde, also dieses wirkliche Gesinde in diesem Haus, weiß überhaupt nicht, was sie tun und so an.
Yes, but you see, first of all, one would need the authority from the building to meddle, to sich einwickeln in deren Angelegenheiten.
Exactly.
I think the first thing might be, if you get Dylan to telephone me and to describe to me in technical language what this controller is, that is the first thing.
Yes.
Because I at the moment do not know. The controller could mean any one of many things.
Yes.
Now, he will know what it is.
Yes.
If he likes to telephone me and tell me what it is, I can then tell you whether I have such a thing.
Yes. Maurice, you know this house. You know the clientele. Do you?
I do.
Is Miss Morgue an easy one or difficult one or what?
Well, I wouldn't have said any of you in that house are easy. In varying different ways.
Yes, yes. Are you of the opinion that a man like Dylan, who has the experience of this house for 20 years, that he knows, and then any outside electrician is at a loss?
I would say that Dylan is better qualified.
Well, that's track two. That her expression or her enunciation of clientele never fails to amuse me. I must have heard it 20 times, and it always catches my attention.
And his reaction.
Yes. And that was his friend Anna, with whom he had a long-standing relationship. She lived in London, and he would go and visit there, and he would sort of... Gosh, well, there's so many stories about Maurice, but he had this habit of taking a siesta sort of wherever he was, and it didn't matter where he was. In the afternoon, he'd suddenly say, do you mind if I lie down now? And if he was here, he would just sort of lie on the floor of the studio in his leathers, you know, probably his leather motorcycling outfit, and reeking of garlic, and the leathers were sort of soaked in some sort of oil, like mink oil or something like that, to keep it supple. And he would just fall asleep, you know, for sort of 20 minutes or so. So anyway, he would take bags of garlic and this, that, and the other. And the other occupants of this house, I think, became increasingly sort of fed up with him. And that's why this chap track eight takes against him for that period. But I've made a film about Maurice called Heated Gloves, which came out in 2015, and there was a screening of this film at the Close-Up Cinema on Sclater Street, and the sort of curator of that show, Gareth Evans, had introduced the film screening. And he let it be known, he'd mailed out to people saying, we're showing this film called Heated Gloves. And a young woman came along and she said, I was absolutely flabbergasted when I saw this program, this film about Captain Maurice Seddon. She said, I used to live in that house.
Oh, no.
In in West London, something square. I can't quite remember what it is now. And Anna, the woman that Morris phoned, had sort of befriended this young woman, and she'd lived in the house as a tenant of Anna's. So she couldn't believe it when she saw that this is a film, because she remembers Morris coming to stay at the house.
Oh, my God.
It was a complete coincidence. And she sort of watched the film. She was very enthusiastic about it. Mm. And on the subject of coincidence, you know David Lester, the film presenter and filmmaker. He found himself in the middle of Germany a few years ago, like 3 or 4 years ago, the middle of nowhere, not, you know, somewhere probably smaller than Hildesheim or something.
Mm.
And he just walked into a bar, and he was standing at the bar, ordered a beer, and started chatting to somebody at the counter, a German chap sort of came. Oh, he said, oh, you're from England, are you? And David said, yeah, David's from America. But lives in London. And he said to this chap, yes, I'm from London. And this German chap just sort of said, I spent a few years in England. In fact, I was working on Volkswagens, and I had to go out to this chap in Datchet, and I spent time in his garden working on his Volkswagen. He was Captain Morris Seddon.
Mm.
And this was this sort of net, this network of contacts
there was a small, even I have had this coincidence happening, because I've been posting about this on Facebook, and someone that I used to be in, someone who used to be in Morphogenesis, he used to play clarinet with us for a year or two, who used to work at, his day job was working at Baldwin's, the herbalist on...
Walworth Road.
On Walworth Road.
Right.
Which is like the place in London to get any kind of herbs and incenses. Yeah. And Maurice used to phone in he used to order this special mixture to be prepared for him.
Right.
And then come in and collect it.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, he used to kind of formally announce himself as Captain Maurice Seddon, and all this kind of... And you know, this friend of mine who I used to know, he's not in town anymore, but it's like, oh my God, I remember, Maurice, you know.
Yes.
Like another kind of who didn't know him sort of thing. Right. So everyone has some.
Yes.
I often think, did I ever meet him somewhere? Because.
You wouldn't have forgotten.
No, you wouldn't
have forgotten. I mean, he was known for, people used to see him. Okay. He's not really like, you remember the guy that we used to walk up and down Oxford Street with a sign saying, you know,
more protein,
eat less, more beans and so on, less protein.
Yeah.
Well, Morris used to ride around London wearing this tabard, saying heated gloves. And so people would only have to catch sight of him once, and he would sort of remain in their memory, you know, especially if you made contact, if you sort of spoke to him, he would hand you one of these photocopied leaflets with his life history on it and so on.
Well,
and so there were lots of motorcyclists certainly who remember him.
Well, I used to deal a lot because I used to work for many years in graphic design studios, and we had a lot of dispatch riders coming in. Because in those days, they used to bring round, all the copy would be printed out.
Right.
You know, and just all kinds of stuff, you know, actual galleys of copy that was for ads and publications, which was then made up in studios, pre-digital. Right. And I'm just thinking, oh, did he ever show up? I don't remember anybody fitting that description. Did I block him out of my mind?
Yeah, right.
Because the possibility would have been there. There were so many bikers that came in all day long.
Well, it's interesting you're saying block out of your mind, because I wonder if, I mean, there are some people, of course, who... you know, probably for class reasons, would probably react against his accent.
Yeah.
I mean, some people might be resentful, especially if you were of a workerist persuasion.
Yeah. Well, no, I just mean in the sense that, you know, because I would have been just so busy working, I wouldn't have paid that much attention to this eccentric biker who came in
to another coincidence, because didn't you used to work in SE1 near to Southwark Cathedral?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And which building was it?
Well, it's one of those modern 1970s buildings, the brick one, the red brick one.
Right. But isn't it the one right next to Southwark Cathedral?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, the dining room, which is where I had this vegetarian restaurant, was in the basement.
I know.
You would have been about... when was this?
Good question. Actually, it was...
roughly.
Well, late... maybe 1990.
Ah,
Yeah.
Because we had the dining room from 1980 to 1990, because Morris would have been a regular visitor, like two or three times a week, would have visited Winchester Walk next to Southwark Cathedral, which is just like a few yards from where you were based in 1990.
The year I can't be sure on at the moment, but it's odd, isn't it? I mean, it would have been close. There would have been almost, meetings.
Yes.
Near meetings with Captain Maurice Seddon.
So is it the strangest record that you've produced?
Oh, no. There's so many strange records. I mean, you have to bear in mind, I did put out a record entirely in Swedish, text piece entirely in Swedish.
Sound poetry?
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Well, it's a radio play, but it's all in Swedish with some electronics. And, there's a lot of eccentric records on the label.
Right. Fair enough.
I mean, that's what I kind of do, really.
Yes, which is why you've... which has brought you to this. It's sort of... It's just a bit of a branch out, though, isn't it, from your... You're mostly sound poetry and experimental music. This doesn't really fit into any category as such, does it?
No, I suppose not. No, it doesn't.
Because it's not even comedy, strictly speaking. It's not like a...
Strictly comedy. This is one of the things I like about it, is it's fairly uncategorizable. And there's quite a few experimental records I've put out that don't really fit into a jazz or a rock or an avant-garde category very easily. They're bits of all of that mixed up. And I like this. I like the uncategorizable very much.
Right.
It's always been appealing.
I mean, if it was in a record shop, where would they put it?
Well, did you see that? I mean, I posted on Facebook. You don't look at it that much, but it was in a Japanese HMV under Soul and Dance.
No.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. It's a... I don't.
Well, okay. Well, I'm flummoxed by that one.
Yeah. I mean, have a look at the photo.
You do go into see secondhand record shops, and they have this section called Exotica, don't they? Or spoken word. I suppose it would go into spoken
word. It's certainly that, but I don't think there's many spoken word sections.
No.
I don't know. It is sort of a novelty thing, but it has that about it. But what I like also about it is that this is really for everybody, potentially. You know, it's not really just for people who are interested in experimental or avant-garde stuff.
No.
I mean, I've played this to my mother. You know, I wouldn't really attempt to play any of my releases to my mother, really. She wouldn't be interested, but she sat through quite considerable amounts of it. So,
is your mother German?
She is.
Okay.
And that's one of the reasons I played it to her. I wanted her to tell me what everything was and whether the edits I've made any sense. Because most of these tracks have had something cut out from them.
Right.
Because, you know, like any phone conversation, there's repetition and tedium.
Did your mother find it entertaining?
Yeah, she did. Yeah.
Enjoyed it? I mean, wanted to listen to it?
Well, I wouldn't say that. I mean, it's not really her bag, but she'd rather listen to the segues, all the Mantovani.
Yes.
Which are stuck between each track.
Right. Well, they are stuck. Yes, there are Mantovani, because Mantovani was one of Morris's favourite composers. And Dan Wilson had a slight hand in some of these segues, I think.
Yeah, we gave him side two to organise just the gaps, the segues between the tracks.
Which he used some reel-to-reel tape recordings.
Oh, there was this reel of tape that was just in a box of his material, and it was completely unidentified what it was, but it was just these people hammering out some piano tunes and some bad singing and bad playing. Right. I thought, well, that'll work. That'll work as a link.
Okay. Well, let's play track one.
Track one.
Which is called, what were you going to say?
Well, all the clicking that occurred on the track with Anna there, the previous track, and the track that's about to come up, there's a lot of clicking, which is which is the foot switch being operated so that you can record both sides of a conversation. And more importantly, only one person at a time can speak.
Yeah.
And it's clear on this call that... The caller doesn't realise that they're not being heard.
Right.
And Morris just keeps talking.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's
what... In some of them, you can just about hear the other person trying to sort of speak.
Yeah, and
very,
being ignored.
Very, but they're sort of muffled, aren't they?
Yeah.
The voice is out. And this is actually... is this called L.A. Woman, I think?
No. Well, that's what we called it to ourselves, but... but we didn't think that was a suitable title.
Okay.
It's actually called May I Explain... All the titles are quotes from the tracks,
right.
Every single one. So May I Explain My Situation, which is 1989, and it's a call. You'll hear what it is.
Speaking. Hello.
Hello, this is Captain Sutton.
Yes, speaking.
Okay, Darcy from the Tonight Show is calling. Can you hold a moment?
Right, certainly.
Oh, hold on, please. Okay, she's going to come out and talk to you on the phone out here. Can you hold a moment?
Yes, certainly.
Hold on.
Right.
Hi, Captain Maurice.
Yes, speaking.
How do you do? My name is Darcy.
Yes.
And I'm calling you from Los Angeles, California.
Yes.
We have a television program called The Tonight Show, starring Johnny Carson.
I see.
It's been on TV for 26 years.
Oh, it's quite a veteran.
Yes, quite a veteran. And as a matter of fact, Johnny Carson owns half of The David Letterman Show.
He owns half of it?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I see.
Okay. I know Madeline from The Letterman Show.
Oh, I see.
And when she told me to watch you in the event that we might be interested in you.
Yes.
And we are.
Right.
And we would love to invite you out to California to be on the show with Johnny Carson.
Oh, well, that'll be an interesting experience. Do you know, I've only once been to America, and that was to go to the other show. And indeed, I've never been to California, of which I've heard very delightful things.
It's a wonderful place. We were hoping that maybe you could join us April 21st, which is a Friday.
Just a minute. Let me have a look at my diary.
Kathy, could you ask Marla to come in here?
Yes, that looks all right as far as I can see.
What I thought we would do, Captain, is bring you in April 19th.
Just let me look at that one.
That's Wednesday.
Yes, that is also all right. Mittwoch 19, stimmt.
So that you have time to get accustomed to the time hours.
Oh, I think that's very wise, because I found myself rather confused in New York.
Right. And then we'll send you back out on Saturday the 22nd.
Just a minute, let me look at that. Right, so I return to England on the 22nd?
Correct.
Yes, right.
Okay, now, we will pay for your plane fare, for your transportation to and from the airport and to and from the studio, and we will take care of your hotel accommodations. When it comes to food and incidentals, you'll have to take care of that.
Well, I'm most awfully sorry. May I explain my situation, first of all, which is a rather peculiar one. On the one hand, you see, that which I do and I have been the subject of countless broadcasts, I don't know if you're aware of this, on television and radio all over the world. For example, in Britain, on BBC One, on BBC Two, on ITV, and on Channel 4. On such things as the, oh, what is the man's name? I never watch television, so I never remember these things. The man, the famous man who died recently, Russell Harty.
Wait, can you stop a moment?
Surely.
Let me find out one thing first, before we go ahead with this.
Fine.
You're an English citizen, correct?
I'm a British citizen.
He's a British citizen. Okay, is, what do you need from that visa? H2 it has to be, or what? Okay, go ahead, Captain. What were you telling me about all your appearances?
Right, let's start again. I've rather lost track. Oh, yes. On the one hand, you see, that which I do and I have been the subject of a very large number of television appearances literally all over the world.
Yes.
As far as Britain is concerned, it's been on all four of the British systems, that is to say BBC One, BBC Two, ITV and Channel 4. Have you ever heard of someone called Russell Harty?
You know, Madeline filled me in on all of this, but what is your point?
Well, my point is that on the one hand, I'm extremely well known and I've been seen all over the world, but on the other hand, curiously enough, anomalously enough, I am as poor as a church mouse. I have no money. And this depends partly upon my life's philosophy and partly on the way I operate. I have never made a god of money. I have very little. I'm very much happier and very much less stressful than most people I know who have lots of money. I operate a partly what could be described as an unofficial, unregistered charity, because my heated clothing goes amongst other people too: paraplegics, sclerotics, arthritics, rheumatics, wheelchair cases, polio sufferers, accident victims, maimed, infirm, elderly, people who otherwise could die of hypothermia because they can't afford to heat one room.
Can you hang on a moment?
Sorry?
What are you... Get to the bottom line. Are you telling me that you need more money while you're here?
I'm saying this. Just as Letterman provided everything for me from top to bottom, everything that I ate and drank and hotel accommodation and tips for the porters of the hotels and tips for the car drivers, I need all that. And furthermore, I can only afford to go anywhere on anybody's television if I am paid on a commensurate basis for doing so. I cannot afford to do it for nothing. The heated clothing is a sort of charity, and it has to be supported by my other activities. And a major source of pocket money is television shows.
Right. Now, we might be able to work out a stipend, a daily stipend for you, and you will receive that in cash when you arrive here. As far as payment on the program, we only pay $200, which you receive at a later date.
Well, I'm most awfully sorry. That, for me, is quite inadequate. I was paid by the Letterman Show $1,445, plus every meal that I had and every drink that I had and every tip to the porters and the transportation and all this. And I'm very sorry, but I cannot afford, I simply cannot, do it for nothing. I mean, you know, one has somehow to run this thing. I look after people who are needy. They need these things, and they jolly well get them, as far as I'm concerned. And where necessary, I give them away.
What I will do is go to the powers that be, my producers here, find out what sort of a stipend we can come up with you for the 3 days that you are here, and find out what sort of payment for your appearance on the Tonight Show might be. I would also like to add, for your consideration, because Johnny Carson is a veteran and has been on TV for 26 years, your appearance on this show will be seen by close to 18 million people in the United States. That is quite a large number of people compared to the David Letterman Show, which has approximately 6 million people. So there, that you can take into consideration also, because your exposure to the United States might affect your current situation financially if millions of people are watching and do like what they see and do want to get in touch with you. As far as a daily stipend for three meals and porter tips, I see $300 as being more than adequate in California. The hotel room, we of course take care of.
Excuse me, $300 what, per day?
Three times $100. And I see no reason why anybody cannot survive on $100 a day.
I would think that sounds reasonable. That is, in other words, to pay for the food and drink that is consumed.
Correct. And then I will find out how much they are willing to pay for your appearance on the show. We are very different from the Letterman Show. And we're also another 3,000 miles further away.
But that is something over which I have no control. I mean, if you want me to come that distance, I mean, that is something you have to calculate into the operation anyway.
Exactly, and I will make you an offer, and if you don't like it, so be it. You won't be coming.
Yes, absolutely, fair enough. Now, let me just fill you in so that you're in a position to inform the people concerned of the background.
I already know, Captain. I spoke to Madeline at length. So I will explain to them everything you have just previously said to me and what Madeline has said to me, and I'll call you back in a half an hour.
Yes, all right, good. You can tell them, amongst other things, I'm a former pupil of Gordonston School, which is known in England as the Royal School. It is a German school by origin. It came from Schule Schloss Salem. It's the school that Prince Philip was at before the war and his sons were at after.
Okay, now why would that make a difference?
Oh, I wouldn't know. I would imagine it could make a very substantial difference. I was commissioned into Royal Signals on the same day, at the same time, and at the same place as my old friend Sir Geoffrey Howe in November 1946. Again, things which may make no difference and may make very substantial difference.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. I'll tell them all this and I'll call you back, Captain.
Would you? I'm half English, half Hanoverian French. Forgive my inquisitiveness, but I'm interested by your fascinating name. Are you of German extraction?
My last name is German, but my family, my father's side of the family emigrated from England. They emigrated from Germany to England over 4 centuries ago.
Ach du liebe Gott, quite a long time ago.
Quite a long time ago.
Nevertheless, I would quote Schiller to you. Wohl dem, der seinen Ahnen gerne gedenkt. Do you understand?
No, sir.
Well, Schiller said, a blessing unto those who honor their forebears.
Well, I honor mine.
I'm sure you do, and that's a great thing. What part of Germany did they come from?
I don't recall, but Captain, may I address your visit right now, and I'll call you back and we can talk later.
Yes, do by all means. Nice to hear from you, and look forward to hearing again. And you'll be ringing sometime this evening, is that right?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Good. Bye-bye.
Back to reality. That was the a call from. This was typical because, of course, he had all these TV appearances. I mean, over the years, I don't know how many there were.
Yeah.
All of which he sort of, whenever there was one, he'd ask them for a copy, and they'd give him a VHS copy or a you know something on U-matic tape or something. So he had this box of tapes, which he would then copy again. Using two VHS machines. So you'd end up with these third generation VHS copies of his TV appearances, which he would then send to people and say, look, here I am on German TV or whatever.
Yeah.
And in fact, I think this is what the person on track 8 mentions. He says he makes reference, doesn't he, to somebody coming to the gate, and he says something like, have you been giving them your copies of your silly tapes or something?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he's entirely dismissive of the whole thing.
A woman in a fox stole.
That's it.
Which I thought was Sandra, your partner.
No. It's a TV person.
Okay, yeah. There's that really great. Who is it? The woman from Radio 4 or the BBC or whatever, and she's there having one of his defrosted meals from the freezer.
Oh yes,
who is that?
Oh crikey!
I've forgotten her.
Eunice Stubbs. Well, she used to do a TV program called Square Pegs, I think it was called, and they sort of long defunct. And
yeah.
She was like the hostess or host of the show, and sort of. Knocked on his gate. But anyway, we're kind of approaching the end.
Let's recap, Clive.
You are Clive Graham of Paradigm Discs, and you are here with the latest release, which is...
Volume 1, incidentally.
Volume 1.
That's important to say, because, there will be...
I'm glad that you're keen to proceed with this.
Originally, project. We were adamant for quite some time. How long have we been working on this since we really started going at it in earnest? It's well over a year, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And for a long time, side two was going to be taken up with one track, one long phone call, which is a great call. But I just thought, I think volume 1 should have more tracks. So...
Yes.
Volume 2 will have this long track, which is great, and I'm looking forward to doing that.
Good. Excellent.
And there's a part 2 to the...
I better start writing another essay.
If you could. If there's another story to tell.
Okay.
I mean, certainly sort of plant the seed of doing that, because
I really do
anticipate doing a volume 2.
Right.
But, I think we've got time to play the track called My Name is Seddon, where he starts getting
track 11
shirty, with someone in a cycle repair shop. And there's a part 2 to that as well, where he says to one shop assistant, will you tell Mark from me that he is unreliable? That's a great...
So this is the vinyl LP, the Seddon Tapes Volume 1, the recordings of Captain Maurice Seddon, issued by Paradigm Discs. And where can people get hold of one? They just Google or whatever. Seddon tapes.
Get it from me. I much prefer if people did that.
Okay. That's Paradigm with a G in it. Paradigm Discs. If you go to Paradigm Discs and look for new releases,
Either
Seddon,
Bandcamp, Discogs, or my homepage.
Right.
Yeah, people will find it. It's easy enough.
Okay. So this has been Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM, still plugging on with the annual fundraiser. go to fundraiser.resonance.fm to take part in that. Let's play one more track then.
Are you lined up for track 11?
No.
Let's do that.
What's this one called?
My name is Seddon.
Hello, are you ATS?
Yes, we are.
My name is Seddon, Audiorama Limited in Datchet.
Yeah.
I should be grateful if you could kindly let me know whether you can supply, and if so, at what price, a rather small inner tube. It's 8x2.
8x2?
Correct. Mm. It fits a hand-propelled or pushed trolley.
No, I don't. I don't keep any tubes like that here, quite honestly.
No, well, can you find out, is this something you can obtain to order?
Best thing is, ring me Monday, then I'll see what I can do for you, because it's 5 o'clock when my supply is sharp.
No, but can't you note it down now and deal with it on Monday?
Yes, I can.
It's a bit of a waste of a call to telephone twice, isn't it?
Right, bear with me. What size is it?
8x2.
8x2.
And the question is, inner tube,
mm-hmm.
How much and how long would it take to get it?
Right, and 8.2.
No, no. 8 inches mm. by 2 inches.
But what's
why is known as 8, letter X, or multiplied by 2.
Right.
In other words, the diameter of the thing is 8 inches.
Yeah.
And the cross-section is 2 inches.
Right. What's it actually off?
It is on a trolley which is pushed by hand by a pedestrian.
Right.
A two-wheeled trolley.
A two-wheeled trolley.
Right.
Right. Can I take your phone number?
Yes. 01753, the same code as you.
Yep.
54.
Yep.
22. 4-2.
Right, your name is Mr.
Captain Seddon. S for sugar, E, double D, O, N.
Right.
May I know your name?
Andy.
Andy, yes. Andy what?
See, I just give my first name.
You don't give your surname?
Oh, no.
You see, I'm very old, Andy. I'm 73. And in my lifetime, it was not considered polite to address people one did not know by one's Christian name, and therefore it was always Mr. Brown, or Mr. Smith, or Mr. Robinson. And therefore I ask you for your surname.
But what I will do...
Are you unwilling to give me your surname?
I'll never give my surname out.
Never do?
No.
Well, there's something secretive there, I don't know what it is. I find that puzzling. I always prefer dealing with people who are as straightforward as I am and say their surname. My surname is Seddon, S-E-D-D-O-N, and I don't care if the whole world knows it.
I will shop around for this tube and I'll see what I can do for you.
Right, and would you please ring me on Monday and let me know the situation?
Yeah, no problem.
Thank you.
Okay.
Zusammengelaufen kommt zusammen. Bartalisea, wir nähern uns an das Bandende. Ich werde dir jetzt schon grüßen und Abschied nehmen und dir wünschen eine schöne, ruhige und nette Zeit. Und bitte, bitte nicht so furchtbar saufen. Bleibe davon fern. Das ist zu gar nichts ist das gut, dieses Saufen, glaube mir. So, das sind die drei Flaschen erledigt. Jetzt muss ich meine Bewegungen machen. Also, ich möchte dich jetzt grüßen. Send you my love and tell you not to drink and to be sensible. and I look forward to seeing you on my return in Hildesheim, but I hope, ich hoffe, als ich komme, dass ich dir in einem ganz, ganz anderen Zustand finden werde, als das, worauf deine Bänder und Telefongespräche andeuten. So, jetzt muss ich meinen Morgen in Bewegung, meine Physical Jerks, meine Gymnastik machen. Erst herunter auf zu die Zehen. Oh, es will nicht, es geht immer weiter. So, jetzt kann ich wenigstens die Zehen anfassen, das ist schon besser. Jetzt will ich noch tiefer, noch tiefer, noch tiefer. Ah, jetzt sind die halbe Finger schon auf den Boden liegend. Jetzt sind drei Viertel von die Finger auf den Boden liegend. Und jetzt kommen fast die Palmen der Hände.
This program has been brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM. If you liked what you heard and want to support our work, please make a donation at fundraiser.resonance.fm.